So I didn't really grow up going to church in the Christian sense. I went to a spiritual church with my dad for years. I always felt like something was missing. So I started going to a Christian church in San Jose. I think when I was 15, I used to just go by myself and sit and hang out and listen to the word. It was really great. I came to Menlo for the first time in January, and I really liked the service. I liked the environment. I liked the how it felt intimate here at the cafe. And then I realized that they were opening up a San Jose campus, so I signed up to volunteer and kind of took off from there. There was definitely times where I felt like I shouldn't be here. Like, I've messed up. I've done things that I shouldn't have done. I've said things I shouldn't have said. I was embarrassed, and I didn't want to be at church, and I felt like everyone was like looking at me, and nobody knew anything, but I felt like I didn't belong here. Like, I was disappointing people, I was disappointing God. And so the way that I started to get to know Caitlin, who's the connections coordinator in San Jose, was completely unexpected. I got coffee with the youth pastor at San Jose, and he was asking if I had a mentor, any Christian woman that I kind of met with regularly and was able to talk to, and I didn't. He connected us via email, and then she just was really influential on me the past few months. She's been just amazing, checking in, talking to me about things that maybe I didn't understand was going on in my life, and just really making me feel comfortable with how my life was going, because at the time I wasn't comfortable with it, and just really making sure that I understood that God was behind it all and that God was the person to lean on. We were sitting at the park one day in July, and she said, "Have you really dedicated yourself to Christ? Have you really given your life to Him?" And even though I was embarrassed, I was honest and told her that I hadn't. And so we prayed right then and there in the park, and it was just a really, really beautiful moment. I really feel like, especially Caitlin, among, you know, some of the other people in Menlo, were just so supportive of that time and just made me really realize that no matter what I do, God's gonna love me regardless. And just to have grace for myself. I definitely don't always have grace for myself, but I think hearing that made me realize that, like, I am okay. It will be okay. Having such a strong community is fundamental to my faith. And I think it's fundamental to the sustainability of my faith, because when I feel like I've face planted into a pile of dirt, I feel like it's my community, especially at Menlo, that picks me up and kind of dusts me off and tell, you know, send me on my way and it's gonna be okay. I've never been to a place where I've been so welcomed and people are so excited to have me here. So I keep coming back.
Well, I want to welcome all of you here with us today, this weekend, and a special welcome to all of you who are watching online, and a welcome to all of our campuses on the peninsula. Just great to be together this weekend. I want to start with a question. How many of you remember the first time that you walked into a church? Can you remember the first time that you walked into a church? Just take yourself to that moment right now. Maybe it was a long time ago. Maybe it was a different kind of church. Maybe it had different kind of music. Maybe it was in a different kind of environment. Maybe it was more recently. Maybe for some of you, it's today. And right now, you're trying to find a way to sneak out before things get any weirder. But regardless of your church experience, I imagine that all of us in some way can relate to that fear that Mackenzie named in that video, that there are times in church where you feel like everyone's looking at you. There are times in Christian settings where you feel like maybe you don't belong. Maybe there's something about you that makes you not qualified. Maybe you'd be a disappointment if people really knew what was really going on. Truth is, I've met a lot of people who feel this way about church. A while ago, I was at a dinner, and I met a friend of some of my friends, and he asked me how I was connected to this group of people, and I said, "Well, we know each other from church." And his eyes got real wide, and he looked at me, and he said, "You go to church? You know, just this very shocked tone, almost as if I had said, you know, as if I'd still believe in the tooth fairy or something like that. And so I decided to up the ante a bit. I said, not only do I go to church, I work there. I don't just believe in the tooth fairy, I work for him, okay? More and more people today feel suspicious of or uncomfortable in church. Even if they feel open to God, even if they feel like they're on some kind of a spiritual journey, there's this discomfort. But here's what's so ironic about this to me. 2,000 years ago, during the life and ministry of Jesus, the one thing that people felt when they were with him, the one thing that was true throughout his ministry was that people felt like they belonged. No matter who they were, no matter what their background, they weren't a disappointment. They were loved somehow just as they were. So what made this possible? Well, I think it had to do with these three essential values that were embodied in the life and ministry of Jesus. These were the things that Jesus was known for. He was known for everyone being welcome, and nobody's perfect. And with Jesus, anything was possible. That's why we're in this series called Who We Are. We want to define ourselves really with the same core of convictions that we see in the life and ministry of Jesus, because we're a Jesus church. But you see, between this ideal that everybody's welcome, which John walked through last weekend, and this promise that anything's possible, which we're going to look at next weekend, you're not going to want to miss that, there is this reality that we must confront. And nobody's perfect. Nobody's perfect. And the question that I want to pose to you is, are you willing to accept this is true about you? And for me, am I willing to accept this is true about me? As a staff, we just finished going through all of our performance reviews. Every person on our staff gets reviewed by their manager and their direct reports and the other staff who work with them. And I just recently had my review with John, and there was a lot of positive feedback. But then he told me something I didn't want to hear. He said, Scotty, I think you have some room to improve. And I just sort of glared passive-aggressively back at him, thinking, I don't want to hear that at all. But here's what's so fascinating. It wasn't that I didn't realize inside my own soul that there aren't plenty of things that I can be better at as a leader and as a teacher and a pastor. It was the discomfort that someone else knew and was naming it. It was the discomfort that someone else could see that in me, because there's part of me that lives with this idea that even though I know I may be broken, I can imagine that everybody out there just thinks I'm doing just fine. And how many of us live on this fuel of trying to almost pretend or believe there's this gap? Just think about how hard you work to control how other people see you. It might be the way you dress, might be the car you drive, it might be the kind of clothes you wear, it might be the things that you put on your resume, it might be what you post on Facebook or Instagram. So much of life for us today is a matter of image management. We want to be known as the perfect husband or the perfect wife or the perfect parent or the perfect employee or the perfect student. And all the while, there is an ever-increasing gap between what we put on and what we cover up. In so many lives today, there is this ever-increasing gap between what we put on, what we show to the world, how we present ourselves, the stories we tell about who we are, and who we really actually are. And we just live with this over and over and over. And here's the thing. This happens in churches all the time. I grew up in a church-going family. I spent a lot of weekends in church services. And I heard a lot about a God who gave us life for really broken, messed up people. But what seemed so odd to me was that when I was in church, everybody seemed pretty put together. They were well-dressed. They were well-behaved. They were well-spoken. People looked pretty perfect in church. And what I didn't realize at the time is that many of those people, not all those people, live with a lot of really significant problems. There were marriages breaking down and addictions being covered up, and there were families in crisis. And yet, some ironically or actually tragically, these real human beings, just real life people, felt like they had to pretend. They felt like they had to put on And it created this very odd dynamic. And if you would just bear with me for a moment, I want us to experience what this actually felt like to me when I was in there. So each of you were given a mask. You were given one of these when you came in. So if you would, just for a moment, if you take that out and just put it on. Just bear with me. We're not going to walk out and walk into a bank together, but just take this out and put it on. Just everybody at every site, go ahead, put them on. And as you do, I want you to just look around the room for a moment. Just look around your room. Look at the people around you. It's pretty weird, isn't it? Now, here's the thing. For a lot of people, this is what Christianity is all about. You can take them off. I can tell you're getting very uncomfortable. For so many people, this dynamic is what Christianity boils down to. It's people who live one kind of life out there Monday to Friday, and then they walk in together in a weekend or into a service, and they put on this facade. They put on this facade. But here's something you need to know about Jesus. Nothing in Jesus' life or ministry, nothing agitated him more than this dynamic. Nothing riled him up more than this. He was known for saying things like this. Time and time again, he would say, "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites." And this word hypocrite was just the first century word for actor, someone who put on a mask, someone who pretended to be something that they weren't. Jesus reserved his strongest warning, not for the irreligious, but for the religious, especially those who pretended to be something that they were not, especially if they were trying to cover up a particular sin or shame in their life. Why? Because Jesus came to create communities where people could finally take off their mask. Jesus came because nobody's perfect. And there's no need for the mask with him. There's no need to pretend. Which takes us back to this well. Takes us back to the story. If you were here with us last weekend, we spent some time in a story about a well, about Jesus encountering a Samaritan woman at a well, not unlike this. And if you remember, in that day, first century Jews, especially a first century Jewish rabbi, would not be caught dead speaking with a Samaritan, nonetheless a Samaritan woman. And there Jesus was, speaking with her. But the Jews in that day, they wouldn't even go there. In fact, I can show you how it happened. In that day, if you're in Galilee going to Judea or Judea going to Galilee, you would not have taken the shortest route through Samaria. You would have gone around. And this is where the story we pick up again. The text says, now Jesus had to go through Samaria. And by the way, if you have a Bible and you want to just underline that line, you should underline that line. It's one of the most important lines in Scripture because Jesus didn't have to go through Samaria at all. Why did he have to go? We'll come back to that. So he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. And Jacob's well was there. And Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. It was about noon. When a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" Now, you may not have noticed, our eyes don't pick up the details as quickly, but in the first century, three details would have stood out like a sore thumb in the story. Three details: that the well was outside the city, that the woman was alone, and that she came to draw water at noon. Now, why is this so strange? Well, you see, there would have certainly been wells inside the city that she could have drawn water from. And she was alone, but in that day, women always would have drawn water in groups. And it was noon. And what's so fascinating about that is, in that day, people would draw water in the morning or in the evening and would avoid being out in the heat of the day at noon. So why is this woman outside the city, alone, at noon, at a well, drawing water? Because she, as we're going to discover, is an outcast. She, as we're going to uncover, has been excluded from the community because of her story, because of her past, because of her sin, because of her shame, because of her imperfection. But here's what's so amazing about Jesus. Jesus didn't come to this well looking for perfect people. Jesus came to this well like he went everywhere looking for the lost, the lonely, the broken, the struggling. In fact, time and time again in the Gospels, that we find out that Jesus came not for the righteous, but for the unrighteous. Not for the found, but for the lost, the sick, the sinners. So not only does Jesus not avoid or exclude this woman, he talks to her, he engages with her, he starts up a conversation with her. He is vulnerable. He asks for a drink of water. And then they have this fascinating conversation, and he says this: if you only knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. And then they go on in the conversation, and he kind of explains what this is about. And then listen to what she says. She says this: the woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so that I won't get thirsty and have to keep coming here to draw water." Do you hear the desperation in her voice? "Sir, will you give me some of this water so that I don't have to come back outside the city alone in the heat of the day as a shamed outcast, imperfect, reminded of my story, reminded of my shame? Sir, will you give me something so that I don't have to come back here on my own and live in this shame anymore?" This is why Jesus had to go. Too many people still in our day are living lives out alone, by the well, outside the city. They may put on a different mask, they may put on a different face, but there they are inside, aching over their story, aching over their past, aching over what they've done. Maybe that's you. Maybe you know some of that story. And she's saying, "I don't want to come here anymore. So tell me how I can be free." You ever thought that? About a struggle or a problem, just how do I get through this? How do I get out of this? Listen to how Jesus responds. He told her, "Go call your husband and come back." And I imagine there was this really awkward silence, like right now. "Go call your husband and come back." And she's thinking, "Well, this living water sounded really good. That sounded really gracious. How about more of that? Go call your husband and come back." You see, Jesus now turns the corner, and this is where the story really turns, and it gets personal. It gets kind of invasive. This is her personal life. Why are you prying in, Jesus? You see, when it comes to spirituality, this is where most of us want to get off the bus, because Jesus sounds really good when he offers living water, but he wants to pry into my family life, my personal life, my thought life. "Go call your husband and come back." Why? Because Jesus wants to talk about what's really controlling her. Jesus wants to talk about why she's out at that well. And she's thinking and calculating her response. Listen to what she says. "I have no husband," she replied, "which is true." And then listen to what Jesus says. And Jesus said to her, "You are right when you say you have no husband. The fact is, you've had five husbands, and the man you have now is not your husband. What you have just said is quite true." It's such an interesting response that she gives. "I have no husband." True statement, but it's a truth that hides the truth. And that's so often how we do our spiritual lives. This is where so many people I know who are good, respectable, church-going people, we live behind a truth that hides the truth. Someone might say, "I'm struggling with my thought life," but the truth is that it hides the fact that they're online every night looking at pornography. Someone might say, "Well, my marriage is on the rocks," but it hides the truth that they're not sure that their marriage is going to make it at all. Someone might say, "I'm going through a hard time," but that statement hides the truth that they're coping with just pain in life through use of alcohol or drugs. Why is it so hard? Why is it so hard for us to tell the truth? For some of us, we've just got really good at kind of avoiding the truth, using those truths that hide the truth. For many of us, the truth is we're afraid. We're afraid. We're afraid of someone might think. We're afraid that there might be consequences. And this is such an issue in churches all over the place. The longer you're a part of a church, the less freedom people often feel to be truthful. It's so backwards, but it happens. If you're new, at least you can say, gosh, this Jesus thing is kind of all new to me. Yeah, my life's messy and I'm going through this, and people practically celebrate that confession. But after a while, if you've been around the church or if you've served on a team and if you're still struggling, well, it's too late for you. I mean, you're a real Christian. You're not supposed to be part of that, all that part of your past. And so we hide. And so we pretend. And so we put on. To which Jesus would say, go call your husband and come back. Let's go to that part of your life that you want to hide, that you're on the run from, and then come back, and that's where I want to meet you. Why? Because nobody's perfect, including you, including me. But here's the good news. The point is not to condemn. Jesus' purpose here is not to condemn, it's to redeem. See, at the very moment that woman has to confront who she is and what she's done, she receives the one thing that she's been missing, the one thing that she needs most. You know what it is? Grace. Grace. The fact that no matter what she brought to that well, no matter what story, no matter what part of her past, the person she found, Jesus, who she found at that well, loved her and accepted her, believed in her. If you want to know what Jesus is about, if you're confused, if you've seen a lot of different stuff in the media or in movies, if you want to know what Jesus is all about, this is it. He didn't come for religious people or even spiritual people. He came for broken people. I love that dynamic in our culture. It's like people ask, are you religious? Well, no, and that's not a good word. And they say, are you spiritual? Well, maybe. Jesus isn't interested in either of those words. Jesus came for the broken. Because nobody's perfect. Nobody's perfect. Which is why he had to go. It's why he had to go through Samaria. It's why he had to come to earth. It's why he's in the room that you're in right now, seeking you out. Because he loves you. You see, this woman discovers at the well that her worth isn't defined by her past. Her worth is defined by how Jesus sees her in spite of her past, in spite of her pain. See, deep down, I think we actually struggle to tell the truth about ourselves, about our lives, because we're confused about what makes us worthy of love. We believe that we're loved because of what we've done or who we are. We believe that we're loved because we've somehow earned it, or we can behave a certain way or believe a certain thing. But I have to tell you, that's not why you're worthy of love. Your worthiness has nothing to do with it, nothing to do with your intelligence, your appearance, your achievements. It has nothing to do with your behavior or your beliefs. It has nothing to do with how Christian you look. The Apostle Paul put it this way. I love his language. He says this, for it is by grace that you have been saved. Isn't that good news? For it is by grace that you have been saved through faith. And this is not from yourselves. It is the gift of God. There's that language again that we saw by the well. It is the gift of God, not by works, so that no one can boast, because nobody's perfect. Which is why the mask has to go. It has to go. You can be whoever you are today with God at the well and find love and hope and renewal. You can dare to be just who you are. One of the best ways I've heard this articulated is by a pastor and theologian named Dietrich Bonhoeffer. And many of you know his writing. He wrote a book called Life Together. And in it, he critiques the church for this tendency to create environments and communities that reinforce concealing our sin and hiding our faults. And he writes this: many Christians are unthinkably horrified when a real sinner is suddenly discovered amongst the righteous, right? So we remain alone in our sin, living in lies and hypocrisy. But it is the grace of God, which is so hard for the pious to understand, that it confronts us with the truth and says, you are a sinner, a great, desperate sinner. Now come as the sinner you are to God who loves you. He does not want anything from you, a sacrifice, a work. He wants you alone. The mask you wear before men will do you no good before him. He wants to see you as you are. He wants to be gracious to you. You do not have to go on lying to yourself and your brothers as if you were without sin. You can dare to be a sinner. You see, the truth is, God's grace is so hard for people like me, people trying so hard to be perfect. It's so hard to understand. It seems so incomprehensible. But God knows you're not perfect. He knows everything about you, and he calls you all the same to himself to be loved, which is why you don't have to go on lying as if you're without sin. You can dare to be broken. You can dare to be struggling. You can dare to be a sinner, as he says. Which is, by the way, exactly what the Samaritan woman did. Let's get back to her story. Then leaving her water jar, the woman went back to the town and said to the people, come see a man who told me everything I ever did. She's not bragging about how good she's doing. She's bragging about the man who has grace for her in spite of what she's done. Could this be the Messiah? And they came out of the town and they made their way towards him. Come see a man who knows everything about you. Come see a man who knows everything about you. That should be the motto, the banner that's on every church that believes in Jesus. Come see a man who already knows everything about you. Nobody's perfect, and you're welcome with him. And guess what? I believe people are hungry for this. I believe people are dying for this. A place where we can dare to come and meet God just as we are. You know, last week, John gave us this phrase to practice, to use with our friends. You should come to my church because everybody's welcome. Was another phrase that we need to embody, we need to speak, we need to live out as a church, and it's this one. You should come as you are. You can come as you are. Everybody just say that out loud right now. You can come as you are. You should come as you are. And when you say this and someone asks you, do I have to believe a certain thing? You can simply say, no, you can come as you are. And if they ask you, do I have to dress a certain way? You can say, no, you can just come as you are. And if they ask you, do I have to sit through a really long sermon? You can say, probably, but you can still come as you are. You can come as you are. I got to tell you, this is one of the first reasons that I came, or this is one of the main reasons that I came to Menlo almost 20 years ago as a college student. I was not in a good place in life, and the faith of my childhood didn't make sense to me at the time, and my life was so far from where I thought it should be. And I heard then senior pastor Walt Gerber say, and many of you know this line, that we are not here to be a museum for saints. We're a hospital for sinners. We're a place where nobody's perfect. We're a place where you can finally take off the mask. And that remains our calling as a church family still today in Menlo Park and at the cafe, at San Mateo, at Mountain View, at San Jose, all around the bay. That remains our calling. Just come as you are. Come see a man who knows your story, who knows your past, who still will meet you there, receive you there, and have grace for you there. Can you believe this is true? And if you've been around here a while, you know this is why we talk about things like life groups, because those are our communities of people who gather each and every week, not to be religious, but to be real, where you can talk about anything that's going on in your life and be loved and be prayed for and be supported, and to be reminded that you're not alone, that there's a God who had to go through Samaria, who would not go around, and who will not go around your pain and your sin or your past. He's going to go right through. Come see the man who knows, who already knows, and who loves you still. Which is why we want to be a come-as-you-are church. If you're wrestling with an addiction, you can come as you are. If your marriage is breaking down, you can come as you are. If you feel lost or depressed, you can come as you are. If you have nowhere else to turn, you can come as you are. If you're not sure you believe any of this stuff about Jesus, just come on. You should come as you are. And I know what some of you are thinking, but didn't Jesus say, be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect? He absolutely did. The question is, how do we get there? How do we get there? Well, it won't be through tireless striving to try to pretend to be perfect when we're actually not. It won't be because we try to avoid all the mess that we see around us or the people's lives that may look or seem messier than ours. In the kingdom of God, the road to perfect is not around our brokenness, it's through it. That's where he had to go. That's where you have to go. The Apostle Paul put it this way. He said, but God said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, Paul says, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. If you haven't been around the church or that doesn't kind of make sense, the simple as this. It means you should be who you are. And you should open your heart to God who had to come and find you just as you are. And then see what happens next. You see, we change not because we try to be perfect, but because we surrender our lives to the God who is. Then we can change. That's how we change. There's no other way. There's a concept in social psychology called the looking glass self. Some of you know about this, the looking glass self. The idea is that you become like what the most important person in your life thinks of you. You will become like what the most important person in your life thinks of you. For some of you, maybe that's your spouse or a mentor or a close friend. Nina and I just recently got a puppy named Bailey. This is our puppy, Bailey, who is simply perfect. Bailey thinks I am the greatest person on the planet. Except when she uses our guest room as a bathroom and then we have words. But here's the thing. You will become like what the most important person in your life thinks of you. So, how different could your life be? How different would your life be if you became like what God thinks of you? If you realize that you don't have to pretend anymore, you could just be who you are, surrender your life, see Jesus for who he is, and learn to see yourself the way he sees you by making him the most important person in your life, and it can change everything. If you looked in the mirror and saw what God sees, fully loved, fully accepted, worth dying for, you may or may not remember today the first time that you walked in a church. Maybe it was a really good experience. Maybe it was a terrible experience. But here's what I can promise you. You will never forget the first time you take off the mask. You will never, ever forget the first time you take off the mask. You take off the facade. You dare to be a sinner. The first time that you come to God just as you are. Because that's where you'll find Jesus. That's where you'll find grace. That's where you'll find love. That's where you'll find hope. That's where you'll find renewal. And maybe the first time for you, just like that woman 2,000 years ago, maybe the first time for you could be by this well today. Maybe the first time for you could be right now. So if you would, if you'd pray with me. Jesus, you call us to come just as we are. You have entered into this place not because we've put our lives back together or we're doing really well or because we can somehow earn your approval. You've entered into this room because we're broken, because we're hurting, because we're lost. And you had to because you love us. Because nobody's perfect but you. And so we don't want to pretend anymore. We want to take that first step right now of surrendering ourselves, of opening up our lives, of taking off that mask, of going to that part of our life that we may want to resist or hold back, of going to that part of our lives that we want to cover up. And that's where you want to go. And that's where you want to meet us. And that's where you have more than enough grace. Jesus, how amazing it is that today we are invited to see ourselves, maybe for the first time, as you see us, as you saw that woman 2,000 years ago, fully loved, fully accepted, worth dying for. May we see ourselves through your eyes today and be changed. Amen.